Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
This is actually one where there is some significant bipartisan support on many of the provisions in the Farm Bill. You know, for Vermont, there's a number of things in this Farm Bill that are very good, and there's one thing that's very bad. The things that are quite good is the dairy stabilization program. And Vermont farmers have been real leaders in trying to get the farmers across the country together on a reform of the way farmers get some support in bad times in dairy. And this program would essentially be an insurance program that farmers pay into. And it would be a dairy stabilization where the market adjustments would be made if the supply goes up or down. Bottom line, it would give our farmers more stability in their price. They've been really hammered with these wicked swings up and wicked swings down. It would give them price stability, and it would save the taxpayer a lot of money. It's cheaper, yet more secure for the farmers. So it's a very, very important reform. I'm working with some of my New York colleagues and trying to get this passed in the House, passed in the House Ag Committee. Other things in the bill that are quite good, promotion of organic farming. That's a big industry that's getting bigger and bigger, and it provides enormous opportunity for young people who are willing to do the very hard work of vegetable and fruit farming, local farming, farm-to-school activities, and farm-to-farm stand. This is a growing part of the focus on nutritious and local food. That's in there. Environmental programs and conservation programs are a big part of the Farm Bill. The aspect of the Farm Bill that's really quite bad in the House version is a $20 billion cut in food stamps. And this is a tough time for folks who don't have much money and they're not being able to feed their kids. And there's hunger is a real issue. So the cuts of $20 billion that are being recommended in the House side, much higher than the $4 billion in cuts in the Senate side, that's too much. And we're going to have a big floor fight about trying to restore the food stamp funding.
But if there are fewer food stamps, let me see if my simple mind can follow this. If there are fewer food stamps, that means that there are fewer people buying the agricultural products, right, which will hurt the farmers.
That's true. And one of the reasons the farmers have always been supportive of food stamp programs is that farmers want to feed people. I mean, you know, you meet our small farmers, and they really still are a big part of our farm and economy. Their goal is to be custodians of the land and to provide nutritious food to the people of the country. And they've always been strong supporters of the food stamp program. And the debate here is that this is it's an expensive program, but it's a necessary program. It's good for our agriculture community, and it's essential for our low-income families that have really been reeling with this recession.
I wanted to change the subject for a moment, if I could, and go to something that a lot of people are warning us about, and that's healthcare implementation. It's a little bit of a complicated bill, and what some people would call Obamacare, I think he's calling it that himself now, and there comes a point at which this thing has to be made to work, but it's complicated. How are we going to do that?
First of all, we have to acknowledge that it is complicated, and it is a challenge, and it is a responsibility. And I've really been urging my colleagues in the Democratic caucus, we supported Obamacare, to be out there leaning in, listening to the businesses, listening to our citizens about what challenges they're starting to experience with the implementation. Because what we have to be willing to do is make whatever adjustments legitimately need to be made on the basis of real-world experience in order to make this thing successful and user-friendly. So job one for us is we've got to acknowledge this is complicated, it is going to be a challenge, and don't hear people criticizing some of the implementation aspects as a reason not to correct them. We've got to do it. Second, we've really got to focus on the cost side on healthcare. In the Obamacare bill, did two things. One, we did increase access to people who don't have coverage, and that's going to be good for our providers and good for the health of our country. Second, we began the process of trying to reform how we deliver health care. Right now, it's all fee-for-service driven approach, which is extremely expensive because the more services you do, the more you make. And what we're focusing on in the transition is performance-based. You know, you only reward or pay for things that actually have a constructive outcome, medical outcome.
So I don't get that. So if somebody comes to you and your GP and your patient dies, it's not a good outcome, right?
Well, I mean, obviously, you don't hold that the doctor can't perform miracles. But let's say that there's an enormous amount of evidence that there's an immense amount of waste in our medical system. And the waste is sometimes tests that are completely unnecessary. There's an enormous amount of procedures that are done that are not necessary, including operations. So the effort in the healthcare bill on the cost side has been really to try to work with our providers to get best information and best practices and make certain that we're not doing things that don't need to be done. And in fact, when they're done, create additional medical risk and bad outcomes. Also, a lot of hospitals on this bill really is going to put some pressure on them to not do things, let somebody out, but in such a vulnerable condition that they're going to quickly be readmitted to the hospital for very, very expensive follow-up. And hospital practices and how they treat the patient, what medical protocols they follow, really has a big impact on whether the person is discharged and doesn't return or discharged and comes back. Now, these are difficult things that involve a lot of medical input, but if we don't really focus on rewarding the good performers, you know, and good performance is going to save all of us money, and instead just blindly pay for any service that's performed, regardless of whether it's medically effective, then we're just going to continue seeing the spiraling healthcare costs.
Okay, so how do you get out of defensive medicine? In other words, you go to the doctor, and the doctor says, I think we've added an echocard here when you really don't need it. But if, God forbid, you're done for, somebody's going to say, some lawyer's going to say, why didn't he do an echocard?
Well, I mean, two things. First of all, that is a problem as perceived by some doctors. So how do you have a system where, in fact, if there's a mistake that's made, the person who's injured is made whole? And is there a way that you can do that without all the litigation and all the apprehension?
And we know the lawyers aren't going to write
it. But there's probably a way that you can do that. You know, Vermont's been trying to be experimental on this and just try to get those, take that defensive medicine factor down a bit. So that is a challenge. But there is also much more than the defensive medicine, the fee-for-service-driven utilization that's excessive. I mean, all of the providers along the way make money the more procedures that they perform. And there's that, so the incentive is there to do that, and that results in excessive cost. By the way, anybody who's ever been basically to a hospital more than just to their local doctor, you know, if you have a local GP, I think this isn't so much a situation. But you go in the hospital, you have no clue. You know, you're there, you're vulnerable,
sure.
You're there with somebody you love, they're vulnerable, and you just entrust yourself to the responsible decision-making of the medical folks.
And you don't know if you're paying $100 for an aspirin.
And you have no idea. That's exactly right. Then you get the bill, and you can't believe how everything is this fee-for-service
if
thing.
You look at the bill.
Well, exactly. So the incentives just are not aligned in the right way. And the reason I talk about this is because this is a challenge whether you were for Obamacare or you're against Obamacare. The system of how we deliver care in this country is a challenge. And we pay the most and get the least of basically all the Western industrialized nations. Mm. So that tells you there's room for improvement.
I'm so sorry, Peter. We're out of time. And I did want to thank you, as always, for all you do for all of us and the fact that you keep coming back, which is always a great thing as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
Peter, and thank you for working on all of this. I know you'll keep it up. Thanks again.
Thank you.